Today's daf in Masechet Beitzah, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Tesvav, and we're holding at the two dots on about a fifth of the way down on Tesvav Omud Aleph. So we had gotten up to the Sandal HaMesumar. The Gemara and Mishnah said you're not allowed to send the Sandal HaMesumar as a gift on Yontav. Lo Sandal HaMesumar. So what is the Sandal HaMesumar? Why is the reason that we can't do it? That was because of the famous Ma'aseh Shanyah, where that happened on a Shabbos, and because of that, they would go there to remember that terrible Ma'aseh when everybody was hanging and was hiding out, and because of a mistake, people panicked, and panicked ended up killing more people than even the Goyim that killed of them. And because of that, they ushered the Sandal HaMesumar. That's called a type of Gezerah that is made because of an event, Mishum Ma'aseh Shanyah, as it's called. Omer Abaye, the Sandal HaMesumar, let me just make it clear, although you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos and Yontav, that doesn't mean that it doesn't have a shein kli. It's not considered to be like something that is just like a rock or something like that. You're not concentrating alone. So it's the Sandal HaMesumar, you're allowed to handle it because it still has a din of a kli. So in other words, it's no different than any other kli, shemalach to liyetzer. If you need to move it for tzorach makoma, wherever it is, of course it has a shein kli. So also l'nalo mishum ma'aseh shehayah, yes, can't wear it, but mutar l'tatalo, because you see for the clearly from the Mishnah that the gezerah, they make a gezerah to put it out of reach completely, a sandal HaMesumar. For haraya, the Mishnah says you can't send it as a gift. That's all that it says. I mean, if you weren't even allowed to handle it, obviously you're not going to be able to send it as a gift. Because he's talking about chutz l'tatalo. I mean, would you really think that ashla totuli also, you're not even allowed to handle it, but you're allowed to wrap it up and put a pretty ribbon on it, you know, and send it as a gift? I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. So clearly, it's mutter as a kli. Velominal sheino tafur. And it says a shoe that hasn't been sewn. I mean, it sounds like it's like the different pieces of the shoe. It's like a little, you know, do-it-yourself set that they're selling you. I mean, so obviously that's not usable, you know. Pshita, what are you going to do with pieces of leather that haven't been formed into a usable thing yet? No, we're talking about, obviously it doesn't mean that it's completely raw. What they would do is that before the actual formation of the shoe, just to get it to fit and stuff like that, they would use either stitches or pegs, pins, to be able to keep it together, make sure everything's the right size, and then finish it. So we're talking about over here that it had the pins, the pegs, whatever it is, the stitches. Rashi brings different ways they would do it. But even so, it's not considered to be usable, and therefore it's not a gift for Yontav. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, you cannot even send a shoe that has not been properly blacked. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda is matir b'shachar, but if it's already been dyed black, then you can send it. But he says you can't send a white shoe, because there you need the bitzat hajir, that's a certain type of clay that leaves a very bad black stain on things. They would use that for dyeing the shoe. Rabbi Yossi says you can't even send a shoe that's been blackened, because you're still going to need to polish it up and to smooth it down, right? And you can't do that on the Yontav either. So the measure tzarech letzach tzachor, which means that basically it's still unusable even if it's black. And actually, they're not even arguing. Obviously, everybody is just following local usage. Markiatre, umarkiatre. So in Rabbi Yehuda's place, Batre the Mar, they used to make the shoes with the suede side of the leather facing down towards your foot. Richie, mute, sweetie. And therefore, the outside, which was black, was basically smooth leather. So if you had blackened it, you didn't need to do much else. You could still use it, even if it may not be mamish polished, but it's smooth. Masha Ein Kein, Ba'atre Demar, where Rabbi Yossi was, they would make it suede. And the raw suede was like really very, very messy. The skin is folded and has all kinds of cracks and so on and so forth. So they would have to smooth it down. You know, even today, the suede still takes a lot of work. And because of that, even if it was dyed, it was still not usable. Zakla. Now, the Mishnah closed with the words that sounded like they ought to be read like this. Kol shenei otimbo b'yomtov, anything that is usable on Yontav, so then mishalchanas. You're allowed to send as a gift. It's going to turn out that that's the wrong way to read the mission. Let's imagine a case where you want to send a gift that actually has no use on Yom Tov proper, but it makes somebody extremely happy to get that gift. And now like he's thinking, oh, wow, that was so amazing of this guy to send me this gift. And so it makes his whole Yom Tov happy. So therefore, let's say a guy like Alon wants to send you a fruit basket, you know, but it's the kind of fruits that you have to meister on. It would still make you happy, wouldn't it? No, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not suggesting. So the same thing would be true. Let's say somebody wants to send you a pair of tefillin. Oh my gosh, he's been working on this pair of tefillin for you, you know. It's not like you're usher to wear the tefillin. You know, you have to wear tefillin. There's no isser. You're not going to wear them, obviously. But boy, does it light up your chag. So you're so happy that you have these tefillin. You can send it to him as a gift. But then it doesn't work because the Mishnah says only if you're going to be using it on Yom Tov. That's what we thought it meant. And Reb Sheshes was actually matir, his talmidim, to send tefillin on Yom Tov. Amalei Abaye, how do you read the Mishnah? Doesn't it say, kol shenei otim bo b'yom tov mishachinato? If you can use it on Yom Tov, then you can send it. He says, you're reading the Mishnah wrong. You put the comma in the wrong place. It goes like this. Kol shenei otim bo, anything that you can use, meaning during the week, anything that is something that would be usable, meaning it's ready to use. Doesn't mean you're going to use it on Yom Tov, but it's not like a shoe that's not completed. It's a complete thing. So then, even if you're not going to use kol shenei otim bo, be Yom Tov mishachinoto. That's how to read it. Not kol shenei otim be Yom Tov mishachinoto. So therefore, it works perfectly good sense. So the Mishnah, as usual, leaves a lot open and turns out to require a lot of thinking first before you're able to conclude that it means what you think it means. Rabbi, well, once we're talking about tefillin, I just have something to say. We know a lot of people like that. Okay. So tefillin, hoyova atun layade, since we got some tefillin into our hands, meaning we've been talking about it, let us have something to say about it, you know? So I just wanted to mention that if somebody was on the road on Erev Shabbos, he's wearing tefillin, that's a Rashi learns Erev Shabbos, v'shakal av chama, the Tosus learns that this is stam. I think there were some people actually present here who got their heads handed to them because they hadn't gotten their tefillin off immediately on time, and they had been walking for years. Daniel's smiling. Remember, they almost removed your head. So that's actually based on Tosfos's approach to the Gemara, that if you're wearing tefillin outside of the time in order to prevent an attack, in order to prevent people from thinking that you think Lila's Montfillin, maybe they'll learn from you Lila's Montfillin, they think you don't know the halacha, but whatever, then there's all kinds of Kabbalistic reasons not to be wearing tefillin. Anyway, they went after poor Daniel when that happened to him once. Of course, you're not supposed to go after anybody, just give him a chance to get his tefillin off. But anyway, so what should you do? According to Tosfos, we're talking about Pachol. According to Rashi, we're talking about on Shabbos. Miniach yodo aleihem, cover the tefillin up until you get to your house. So again, this papashas would be that people shouldn't see it. But others learn that personally, I don't really quite understand what the question is. But others learn that since Rav at Paskin, that's something that is usher to do publicly, you're not allowed to just cover it and think that's enough. I mean, it doesn't say here that you think it's enough, but okay. So they give a different reason than that is that if you keep your hands on it, so then you'll remember that you're still wearing tefillin, you'll take them off when you get home. If you're not thinking about them, you don't have your hands on them, you may simply forget and keep wearing them, and that would be the reason. And if you were sitting in a Beit HaMidrash and it was Erev Shabbos, here everybody is maskim, it's Erev Shabbos because of the Lashon, which here, instead of saying Shokal of Achama, says V'kadash alav hayom. And that, in fact, is Tosfos's proof. I mean, they seem to be two different cases. One is that Kiddush alav hayom means it's Shabbos. The other is Shokal of Achama means it's night. Those who understand it as Rashi, as both of them are talking about Shabbos, they explain that when you're on the road, so then you have to actually, the only siman that you have is Shokal of Chama, so you see the sun setting, so then you know it's Shabbos when you're in the Beis HaMidrash. So everybody around you is keeping Shabbos, you know, when people, you hear the tekiahs, and you're part of the city, so you know when it's Shabbos. So there we don't say the word Shokal of Chama, we say Kiddush alav hayom. Okay, anyway, so put your hand over your tefillin, same idea. How can you say this? Doesn't it say in the Braita, Yababa Derech V'Tfilin Broshov Kadash Alav Hayom? See, here is the case basically that definitely, like Rashi, it says Kadash Alav Hayom even when you're traveling. So this is certainly Erev Shabbos. You said the guy should go home, but he shouldn't go home. Over here it says you just go to the nearest place where you can safely put your tefillin. You don't continue walking to your house. And Haya Yoshev beBeit HaMidrash veKadash Alav Hayom. And Yachidon HaShigaya leBeit HaSamuch leBeit HaMidrash. Because the Beit HaMidrash in those days used to be out in the fields. And because of that, the first house you get to where it's safe to store your tefillin, then you can have to put it there. HaShemagaya beBeit HaSamuch leBeit HaMidrash. And you said you can wear it home. How do you explain that? Look, Ash, it's two different cases. The first case, this Bryce is talking about where it's Mintera. There's Shmirah on that house, so there you can leave your tefillin. The case of Abaye was referring to, there's not Mintera. So then but Abaye would agree that if there's a closer house that is Shamur, of course, then you don't have to bring it to your own house, put it in a place which is Shamur along the way. So then I don't understand this anymore. That doesn't make any sense. Because if the house is not Shamur, so then why does Abaye say that the case is that you're wearing your tefillin on your head? Let me ask you something. If you find tefillin out on the street and they're not in a place that's Shamur, and it's Shabbos, didn't we learn before, at the end of Erevin, we learned that you're supposed to put those tefillin on Shabbos, right, by one pair at a time, walk home, take them home, walk back, pick up another pair, walk home and bring it home. So then why would Abaye say only if you were caught short wearing your tefillin, even if you see it in a mokum that is not Shamur, you'd have to pick it up and bring it home? So then my Aryeh Barosha, why are we talking about a case where it's on his head? Even if he found the mochtan baharanami, they're lying on the ground. Remember that we had the Mishnah at the end of Erevin that said, if you find tefillin, hamotzei tefillin, you find tefillin outdoors, machnisan zug zug, you bring them in one pair at a time. Okay, so that's true. I need to explain it better to you. There are different levels of Shmira. Hello, Kash. Hod mintra machmas ganve u'machmas kalbe. The Braita that says you have to leave it to the closest home is talking about a level of Shmira that protects it from dogs and protects it from people who would steal it. And Masha'ink and Abaya, he says there is obviously a place where it's shomer from dogs, and therefore you're not allowed to bring it in as long as dogs can't get it. But it is not shomer, it can be stolen. So now, if it wouldn't be that Abaye taught us this, I would have said, you know what? Who cares if I leave it out there? Because after all, I mean, let's face it, most mafiosos are Jewish, right? And there's a few Italians here and there. But Rov Listim are Yisrael, most of them are Jews. So anyway, it's all in the family, you know, and they're going to protect tefillin. I mean, they may be rotten Jews, but tefillin, I mean, they're not chas v'sholom going to be mechal the tefillin. So you might have thought that in such a place where it's obviously we're talking about a place that's mostly Jewish here, and you can leave the tefillin in the closest house. That's what you would think. Therefore, it says Abaye, no, that you should take the tefillin to your own house if you're wearing the tefillin, even though where it could be left in that closest house, dogs wouldn't get hold of it. But if Ganavim could get hold of it, you should take it even home. If you find tefillin, so then you shouldn't move them if they're not going to be grabbed by dogs. Even though they are chasufim, even though they're left open to ganavim. And this seems to me to be a very important moment for our kapitan. Hadran alach betza.
Bli neder funtin de helike perek.
Thank you. So before we begin our perek, I must point out that some people look unhappy. I don't want to mention any names, but they know who I'm talking about. And since it's the siyum of a perek, and since It's Erev Yom Kippur, which is an immensely happy time, and we're actually eating as part of that celebration. And I've been trying to cheer up some of these people, and it still doesn't seem to be working. So I just wanted to say that it would do my heart a lot of good to see a real smile and not all of this type of anguish on faces on Erev Yom Kippur, because I got lots of anguish in my own life, so I don't need any more. I need some encouragement and some happy faces today to be able to plow ahead, because we all have big jobs in life.
Okay. Rabbi, a public service announcement. Because we have a mitzvah to eat all day, Rabbi Yaakov Kleinman has a little plastic bag filled with mints.
Oh, and if anybody, Rabbi Yaakov, are you going to be handing them out?
Yeah.
Usually you hand them out, but he refuses to open up his Zoom. So how the heck is he going to hand them out? I don't know. Well, at least you handed out the sound of your voice. That was also a big gift. We only get once or twice a year. Okay. All righty, everybody. So before we begin our next parak, let us point out that we've got some serious problems over here. Remember that we started off our mesechet with the idea of the Isser of Hachona. That was Hachona de Rabba, right? And our next parak is going to be involved in the dinim of making an Erev Tafshilin. Now, how the heck can you make an Erev Tafshilin if it's an Isser de Raisa, according to Rabba, to prepare anything from Yom Tov to Shabbos? I mean, the Rabbanon can't get around an Isser de Raisa. It's all very nice. I mean, you're talking about an Erev when it comes to carrying on Shabbos and so on. That's because they created that Isser of carrying from one Rishus HaYochid to another Rishus HaYochid. But how can they change an Isser D'oraita? So what we'll have to say is that it works out very beautifully. This is what Tosfos said back on Beis Amud Beis, that it works out very well because Rabba, who is the one who says that the Isser of Hachana is a D'oraita, is also the one who says that Klal called Ho'il, which we've spoken about in the past, and now becomes very critical for us. Ho'il means that Ho'il, Rechim Mikla'e Orchim, since if guests would show up, then you would be able to feed these suddenly appearing guests the things that you're cooking. So basically, whatever you make on Yom Tov is really theoretically usable for Yom Tov. And because of that, there is no Isser, really, D'oraisa, because Ho'il is a definition of anything that is possibly usable on Yom Tov. And you don't need to actually plan to use it. It's just the Rabbanan asserted doing anything that isn't planned for Yom Tov. So if it's planned for tomorrow, you wouldn't be able to do it. But even according to Rabba, it's only the Rabbanan, because you wouldn't be over on the Isser of Achon and the Rabbah. Therefore, the Rabbanan can also be matir that which they asked. So because of that, it would work out even according to those who hold Achon as the Uraita. Now, there are others who, even though they're masking that you're certainly not allowed to prepare from a Shabbos to a Chol, from a Shabbos to a Yontif, you are allowed to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbos, because Yom Tov is also the idea over there. The Shabbos is Mekudesh, and because of that, there's no Isser in cooking Midiraisa from Yom Tov to Shabbos. They're both viewed as the same Kedusha. And therefore, since the Rabbanan asserted it, the Rabbanan can be matirit. So this is the other approach. We have Rabba's approach, and we have Rav Chista's approach, which is not discussed right away here, but which is part of the way that the Gemara we just had not read not so long ago, we had in Psachim as to why the idea of an Erev would actually work. So those are our two approaches. Now, once we're aware of the Chiyuv of Erev, so let us now begin our Halakha Perek, which teaches us all of these dinim. Therefore, starts the Halakha Mishnah. What happens when a Yom Tov falls out on an Erev Shabbos? So over there, you ought to have to make your food before Yom Tov, at least Min HaRabbanan. Because of that, we made a concept called an Erev Tafshilin. Now, why something is called an Erev for Tafshilin purposes is a big machlokas Rishonim. And in order to properly understand it, we're going to have to first take a look at the different bases that we have for what the point of an Eruv is. Why didn't we just simply say that, okay, there's no Isser in cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbos, like the D'oraisas? Why first Aser it and then be Mater it with this artificial Darabana device called the Eruv? Why don't we just rely on Hoyo according to Rabba? Or why don't we just rely on the fact that there's no Isser D'oraisa in preparing from a Yom Tov to Shabbos according to Rav Chisda? So this is what we're going to have to figure out. But in any event, the Mishnah, of course, gives us the facts as they are. A Yom Tov that falls out on an Erev Shabbos, a person should not actually be cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos. And we're talking about without making an interview. Lo yavasha b'tchilam Yom Tov l'Shabbat. You can't plan out to make food that should be there for you for Shabbos. But you could cook for Yom Tov without worrying about, I need to cook, I don't know how many people are coming. You don't need to be mitzamtzem in how you cook. And if there's food left over, that's fine. You can eat that food on Shabbos. But you cannot, as we're going to see later on, you cannot use ha'arama to get around the need for the Erev. In other words, you can't say, oh, you know what? Maybe I'm going to invite Moshe Forman, and maybe I will need like five times the amount of food I usually have. So, and then decide not to invite him, really, right? So over there, you managed to get around the Erev because you pretended you're going to need the food. That's called harama. I see we don't even get a smile out of Moshe Forman. So that's called harama, and you're not allowed to do that. Okay. Oset tafshabo, here's what you can do, and there is a way around this whole problem. You can make a dish of some kind from Erev Yantiv, and that is your cooking for Shabbos. Just one thing. And you can rely on that one thing and say, based on this beginning of my cooking for Shabbos, so now I should be allowed to do whatever I need to do, to cook, to bake, to do hatmana, to light fires, whatever I need to do from Yom Tov to Shabbos, I am now allowed to do it based on this. So that's the tafshil. But Shammai says, wait. Don't say a tafshil. You need shnei tafshilin. So an Erev has to be made out of two kinds of things. You could have a steak and potatoes or something like that. But you can't just have a steak. But Beit Hillel says, no, even a tafshil echad. But Lamaisa, even Beit Shammai would agree that if you have the type of food that includes an additional food that's made with it, let's say you're making fish and the fish is covered with egg, which was the way they would usually do it, that's fine. That's considered to be two tafshilin, even a little bit of Beit Shammai, and would be a perfectly kosher Eruv. Now, how about if someone ate up the Eruv? So the doggy ate it. What happens now if your Eruv disappears on Shabbos, on the Yom Tov, before you're able to do your cooking? O Shabbat, or it was lost. Lo yavashu alav batchila, so now you cannot rely on it in order to be able to cook now bitchila, in other words, primarily for Shabbos, and you'd be stuck. But im shi'er mimenu koshuhu sumech alav l'Shabbat. As long as there's some amount of it left, so then if you originally made it a proper Erev, so then it's going to be the shi'or is enough to be matir. Where does this come from, this whole idea? Minan emile. Now, when we say minan emile, obviously we don't think it's a d'oraisa. We're saying minan emile in terms of where would be the place that the Chazal or Mitakein would be semichan in the Pasuk to point a direction to this concept. Omar Shmuel, since it says, Zachar et Yom HaShabbat v'katsho, that means go out of your way to make absolutely certain that when the competitor for Shabbos comes around and is doing its best to make you forget Shabbos, because, I mean, like, why would I forget Shabbos? But there is a time when you might forget Shabbos. If it's Erev Yom Tov, during the day where you normally prepare for Shabbos, and Yom Tov is like, whoa, you know, there's many more things that you, I mean, anybody could see what their wife is doing for Shabbos and what their wife is doing for Yom Tov. I mean, for Yom Tov, it's cooking up a storm, like, for a few days before, and the family is coming, and whatever, so over there, it's easy to, like, get so involved in your preparations for Yom Tov that sort of you're looking at Shabbos as a leftover, you know, if there's a little stuff left over for Shabbos. I mean, that is a destruction of the hierarchy of values. I mean, it's all very nice to be more makpid on the concept of simcha you have on Shabbos, on Yontif, but there has to be the covered Shabbos. And therefore, since Yontif is now competing with Shabbos, the Pasuk is telling you, go out of your way to make certain that you're not going to forget the Shabbos. So if you have to start cooking for Shabbos before Shabbos, so there, you're not going to forget the Shabbos, because, oh, now I understand. So, but why, how exactly does it work that you need the Erev Tavshilin? I mean, this is all very nice. What's the mechanism? What are you actually doing? Oh, my Rava, well, if you need to set aside food before Shabbos and before Yontif, and you have to say, this is the food for Shabbos, so then obviously you're going to have to set aside something that you'll cook for Shabbos. So that way you will be borer a mana yafa, both for Shabbos and a mana yafa for Yontif. And this way, the competition between Shabbos and Yontif will not be devastated. Rav Ashi says, you guys have it all backwards, gentlemen. The din of the Erev Tavshilin is not a din in saving Shabbos. It's a din in saving Yontif. That's the point. Because all it is an excuse. Shabbos is not really part of the entire concept. We're using Shabbos for the purposes of Yontif. Let me explain to you how. Because when we force you to make an Erev, what we are showing you is, you know how important Yontif is? You can't use that Yontif even for cooking for Shabbos unless you do something special. So then people think to themselves, oh, wow. So there's really a serious problem in doing something on Yontif that would not be Litzerich, the Yontif itself. Certainly if it was L'chol, oh my gosh, I never realized it was so chomer that I'm not even allowed to do it for Shabbos. That's why we do it, but it is not really focused on Shabbos. It's the exact opposite. And therefore, says Rav Ashi, it's Kadeshi Yomru, if even Eino Fin Yomtev L'Shabbos, Kal V'chomer Yomtev L'chol. So it's basically an excuse for using Shabbos to prove how chomer Yomtev is. Okay, now let's take a look at how the Mishnah will either confirm or actually make a problem with these reasons. Said in the Mishnah like this. Now, this means you must begin cooking on Erev Yontif. Now, I understand why, according to Rav Ashi, you have to start cooking. Because the focus is cooking. So we want you to recognize, look, you can't just cook on Yontif. You better cook before Yontif. That's the whole point, according to Rav Ashi. But according to the way that we explained it initially, which was Rava's approach. And Rava's approach was that you need to make sure that you have a good portion for Yontif, right? That was the whole idea. We want to save Yontif, Shabbos, from the threats of being overwhelmed by the need to cook on Yontif. Well, if that's all I need to do, remember his language, Kidei she'ivror mana yafa l'Shabbat and mana yafa l'Yontif, right? Okay, so then I can do that right before my soda. On Yontif. Well, I have to before Yontif. I come home, and before eating, I say it's time to make the Erev Tavshilin. Here is our mana yafa for Shabbos Kadesh. This is for tomorrow. Nobody should eat it. And here, the other things are for Yontif. And that serves the purpose 100%. So, I mean, the point in the Mishnah seems to be specifically that the Takana is before, then that shows that actually Rav Ashi's approach was absolutely correct. The whole idea is to show you mustn't cook on Yontif, it has to at least begin being prepared from before Yontif. Says the Gemara, well, you know what? Let's just see it inside. Haina do me Erev Yontif in Beyontif Lo, according to Rav Ashi, but according to Rava. Why do we say it has to be Erev Yontif? It could be even a Yontif Nami. Says the Gemara, look, according to Rava, you're really right. Theoretically, Ein Achinami. Surprisingly, according to Rava, there's nothing innate about the Erev that says it has to be done before Yontif. Actually, it could be done Yontif morning. Except that since Chazal were afraid, that's the whole point, isn't it? I mean, the point is that Yontif preparations are very overwhelming. So because of that, we're worried you're going to come into your house on Yom Tov morning, and you're just going to forget to do the Erev. So, I mean, if you're working on it the whole day, Erev Yom Tov, so then at some point in the day, as you can know, you almost forget about it when it's Erev Yom Tov, forget about it on Yom Tov. You know, somebody reminds, did you make an Erev? Oh my God, I forgot to make an Erev, right? So because of that, they were koveya the Erev Yom Tov. But it's because of logistics. It's not because of concepts. According to Rav Ashi, it's not logistics. It's part of the essence of the Erev. Remarkable. Totally different pictures of the purpose and the essence of the Erev. So therefore, says the Gemara, yes, according to Rava, ein achinami, theoretically, we could make an Erev on Yom Tov in order to be boyer of money on Yafel HaShabbos. El egzera shema yifsha, because of the fact that it's so easy to forget, we're afraid that you won't make it. Now, all of this was based on the pasuk of save Shabbos from competitors, which doesn't seem to work out according to all of the approaches of what it is that the Erev is working out as. So there is, in fact, other psukim that have been used by Tanoim before the Amoraim. Note that we have this all over, right? And Amora says something, and then it says, V'tana maite le'neocha. That's like very, very common. It's in this Masechet, as usual, that Rashi goes out of his way to define the fundamental basis of these kinds of words and expressions. So Tana Maisla Melchi, Rashi goes through a whole explanation of how it is that the Derech of the Gemara is that we give Amoraim a chance to show their view, because that would be more nogea, the mechanisms. And then afterwards we say, but before them there were Tanoim who had a different basis. Okay. Anyway, so this is very common to us. And the Braita, Netana, brings a pasuk that says, Eit asher tofu eifu veis asher tevashelu bashelu. It doesn't say, afu ubishlu today on Friday. It says, what it is that you want to bake, you should bake. And what it is that you want to cook, you should cook. I mean, like, why the story about what it is that you want? So, Mikan Omar, Rabbi Eliezer, look, you can't on every Erev Shabbos necessarily bake just because you bake, or cook just because you cook. There are times when an Erev Shabbos is not a time that you're allowed to cook on or bake on for Shabbos. When is that? When it's Yom Tov. So over there, only if you had something that was Esha Shetofu, then you can continue being Efu. So in other words, you can only be ofin ela ala afur. You can add to the food that you had been baking Erev Yom Tov for Shabbos, you can add some more. You could be mevashel, if you had been mevashel Erev Yom Tov, you can add to the bishul. That's why it uses the strange lashon, it doesn't say hayom afu bishul, which is the normal way to speak. Mikam semchu chachobim le'eru ve'tafshilin min ha'tera. And this was the basis. And we're going to have to talk about why, which will take us some time to get to the full sugya, obviously. Why did he say that you can only bake if you have baked, and you can only cook if you have cooked, which is mashma, that each thing requires a continuation of something that was similar to it. It's not just you could start, so you start baking, so now because of that you can also cook. Like we do. I mean, we say based on this, we can light our matches, or light rather our candles on Yom Tov, and so on and so forth, right? We can do Atman. I mean, why don't we do a different act and a different food for everything that we're preparing? Okay, this we're going to be getting to later, not today. Turn around, Bonnie. Maaseh Barabi Eliezer. So once it happened that Rabbi Eliezer was sitting there on a Yom Tov and he was giving his drasha. Now, Rabbi Eliezer, you will recall, he was of the opinion that, you know, you could spend the whole day learning on Yom Tov. So he was very happy spending the whole day of learning for Yom Tov. You know, it was a half an hour for a kiddush in the morning. Fine. So here he is. He's sitting and he's darshaning the entire day. Says, Yosheva Derech, calling on Kula Bilchas Yom Tov. Anyway, it's the middle of the drasha, and the first group of guys finally gets up the guts to walk out because this is ridiculous. Their kids are starving at home. They want something good to eat. Everything is prepared. And this, the Rav is going to be speaking for another 5 hours. The first 3 hours were enough for them. So they decide they're getting up and walking out. Okay. So, there, you know, every guy was afraid on his own, but when there was a certain critical mass, you sort of get to hear, like, movement in the chairs, and so all of a sudden everybody gets up and runs. Okay, so the first group runs out. Rabbi Eliezer looks at the door, you know, as it's waving shut. And he says to the loyal remaining people, he says to them, "Whoa, those guys are Balei Pitasim. Those guys must have like awfully big barrels of wine that they got to spend the whole day drinking. I mean, these people are like serious, serious bar goers, I would assume. Why else would they have left the Drusha?" Okay, anyway, about an hour later, another group finally gets up to Katsunego. So they run out. He looks at the swinging door and he says, "These guys are Balei Chavuyot. Now they've got like these large, containers that are not quite as big as pitasim, but they're barrels." Okay, another group finally, after hearing this, the third group leaves. He says, "These guys must have big pitchers, Balei Kadin." The next group goes out an hour later. These guys have bottles of wine. The next group leaves. Well, that group is the kind of group that they can't go through a day without ordering at the restaurant a cup of wine. You know, maybe they wouldn't order the whole bottle, but they are still Balei Kosot. So the sixth group, when they started leaving, and they didn't even get out, and he says, "Now these guys are Balei Me'era. These guys have gotten everything wrecked." And he looks on the Talmidim that are not going to move. They're scared. And they start to go pale, because they thought that he was relying on the latter groups to figure out when they have to get home to take care of their families. And now he's angry at these people for staying so long. And he says to them, "No, I'm not saying about you. I'm saying about these no-goodniks that left. Because Merichim Chaye Olam, Voskim B'Chaye Sha'ah, this is what they're doing. But they're leaving a chance to hear my drosha, which is Chaye Olam, and instead they're going out there for what? For temporary needs of a world that lasts a few short decades. What do they need that for? I don't understand." Bishat Petiratan, when finally he ended the drosha and the last guys are leaving. So then Rabbi Eliezer says to them, the pasuk from that we had on Rosh Hashanah in Ezra, "Lechu ichlu mashmanim ushtu mamtakim vishilchu manot lein lachon lo ki kadosh hayom ladanenu al teatzevu ki chedvat Hashem imeuschem." Now you're going to be making your seuda. That's making a simcha for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now you can be sure that you don't have to worry about your tzrachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of all of your tzrachim. Omar Mar, now, what did he mean when he said, I thought Simchas Yontif was a big mitzvah. These people are going to a mitzvah. So why is he saying that it's only Chayei Shah? I mean, they are being osek in what they're supposed to be osek. Well, this is Rebbe Eliezer L'shitato. Rebbe Eliezer L'shitato holds that Simchas Yontem is actually a reshus. The Tanya, remember, we had, the Rebbe Eliezer says, look, you can choose what you're going to do on Yontem, because on the one hand it says L'Hashem, Atzeret L'Hashem Elokech, on the other it says Atzeret Yelachem. So make up your mind, you know. Eilo L'Adam B'Yom Tov, look, you can either use the day for eating and drinking, or you can use the day for sitting and learning. I don't understand what's wrong with sitting and learning. Rebbe Yoshua says, no. The Torah is saying that you need both, and that partially it should be half, literally half, it should be half lachem, it should be half lachem, chetzel lachem, chetzel lachem. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, they're both coming off of the same pasuk, v'shnei mikrei chadoshu, because on the one hand it says, katuv v'chad omer, atzeret lachem elokecha. So here it's talking about Shvi Shel Pesach, and that should be, it says, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then when it comes to the pasuk referring to Shmini Atzeres, it says Atzeres Tielachem. But basically the idea of a closing day of Yantiv should be the same if it's called Atzeres. So make up your mind. Is it Lachem or Ketzad? Is it Lachem or is it Lachem? So Rebbe Eliezer says it's giving you an option. Okulo Lashem, Okulo Lachem. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua Sava, no, it's telling you that you have to have two visions of what you're doing. So Chetzel Hashem, Chalkeo Chetzel Hashem, Chetzel Lachem. And when he said, send food to people that are unprepared, La'in Nachonlo, this is a lotion of Hachana, right? That's not an accident. We're talking about the concept of Hachana L'gabe Yantev. What must it mean? Omer of Chista means people who did not take care of the issue of Achona. They didn't make an Erev Tavshilin. So to the Mishal, Iniach, I will be Tavshilin, not going to have anything to eat. Send them food. Ikri Amre. Mi Shalo Hayalo Laniach Erev Tavshilin. It means for people not who didn't make, but they didn't even have the food that was necessary to make, or something happened in their life, and they were ended up being busy the whole day. And the case of Russia, maybe they lost a wallet full of money and they're running around all day trying to find their wallet and it killed their day and they forgot about the Erev. For them, you help. But Misha, Yalal, Aniach, Erev, Tavshilin, Velo, Aniach, a guy who's just a poshea. He doesn't care. Poshea, who don't help guys like that. Now, he wouldn't have told you to go make sure that they have what to eat. Let them suffer. And let them suffer because that way they won't do it again. And then when it says, Ki chedvat Hashem imuzchem, Omer b'yochan mishum rebe lozib rebe shimen, Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, making me happy, by making a simcha siyante, and making my chag, a time of simcha, lavu alai v'katshu kedush zayom, borrow on my cheshbon. You don't have money? Don't worry about it. Use your credit card. How are you going to pay back your credit card? You can rely on me. That's Chedvat Hashem. Imuzchem. That will be your strength. Aminu bivani porea. I'll pay back the credit card. So this is Chedvat Hashem is your security in this sense. Your security, your financial security. V'om Rabbi Yochan Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Shimon. Harotzeh she'it kaimune chasav yita behem eder. If somebody wants his name to be known as being these his properties and not that they should be able to be taken away from him and claim that he had sold and so on, plant an eder tree. Is the portion of pshat is a kind of tree. Rashi suggests it might be, based on the continuation, it might be a plant which serves as an insecticide. But anyway, shenemar adir bamarom Hashem. Adir is a play on words of the eder, and it means very powerful. Inami Idra, actually the name of the tree itself is Idra, like people say. Why is it called Idra? Dekaimila Dari Dari. It's something that lasts because it's such a powerful and well-known tree that somebody owns it. The tree is named after him. It's so-and-so's famous tree. And because of that, somebody can't just come along and take it over claiming it was his field. Taninami Achi, Sadesh Yeshbo Eder. Now Rashi is bothered by the last words, Uperotel Mishtamrim. How exactly is its fruit considered to be guarded? So he suggests that maybe the eder is an insecticide plant that it is shomer on the field and it keeps the perot. But his other part, if it's a tree, it could be that it actually forms with its branches like a fence around the tree. Tony Rav Tachlifa Chua the Rav Noe Choza, that you should know that this idea of using more money than you have to buy your food for Shabbos and Yantip, Kol Mizonotav Shel Adam Ktsuvim Lo Mirosh Hashanah Ad Yom HaKippurim, everything that a person is going to be marviach during the course of the year is kavua from last year's Rosh Hashanah until the coming of the end of Yom Kippur. The only thing that you don't have to worry about, and you can risk putting it on your credit card, and you can know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will add, is if you're adding money that you don't know where it's going to be coming from for Shabbos, for Yontem, or for your kids' education, for learning. We're over there. If you reduce your money, you're not going to save any money because your money will be reduced. And you won't get as much as you otherwise would have gotten. And if you increase your money, you mosifimlo. Omer Rabbi Abba, where do we see this, that the Pasuk says that it's going to be kavua based on Rosh Hashanah till the brachas are handed out on Yom Kippur, the way that Yitzchak Avinu handed out those brachas to Yaakov and to Esau on Yom Kippur, as the Zohar points out. Omer Rabbi Abba, my krah, tik'u b'chodesh shofar b'kesel yom chagim. So what does this mean? Blow the shofar at the time of b'kesel, when the moon is covered. So blow a shofar at the chodesh, means at the new moon, at the time when the moon is still covered. Well, when is that? That's only on Rosh Hashanah. No other chag is at the time where the moon is still at its molad and is invisible for most of the time. Now note that then it continues to say, Ki chok l'Yisrael hu mishpat l'Elohei Yaakov. The Lashon of chok means specifically that it's a getter of chok, because chok is a Lashon of mizenas. It's a Lashon of that which you need for your parnasa. And my mashma da hai chok lishna de mizonehu. How do you know that? Dichtiv. V'achlu et chukam asher natan lahem paro. So you see that the over there it's talking about the Koyesh HaKohanim, that Paro would give them the chok from the time of Yosef still, and that was clearly their food and everything that he was giving them. Everybody else had to work for it, but the Kohanim didn't. So you see that the Lashon of chok is something that the Melech is koveya for you. Marzutra amar meyacha. We find that the Pasuk actually refers to Lashon, to Lechem, the Lashon of Chok, because the verb, Atrifeni, is a Lashon of Teref. Teref is what it is that you're going to be able to eat. So Atrifeni Lechem Chuki. So we're talking about Lechem as given to you as a sense of Chok. So therefore, if the Chok liYisrael Mishpat Elokei Yaakov, it's a reference to the Chok that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually hands out to you at the beginning of the year, and that you're zeichet to up until the next Yom HaKippurim.